My name is Malcolm Mills and I'm director of East Fishkill Historical Society. And this afternoon, which is Wednesday, January the 24th in the year 2007, I'm sitting in the dining room of Silver Ledge Farm with Elton Bailey Jr., who has lived in this area his whole life, and he's graciously agreed to have an interview with me and talk about life as it was over the past 80 years. Let me start, Elton. I've given away your age. I know you've got a few more months to go, but you're coming up to your 80th birthday. And from what we were talking about earlier, you grew up, in fact, on the farm which is adjacent to this one.
Correct.
And that was your father's farm?
Yeah, so that's where I was brought up. It was originally my father's mother's family's farm, the Wright Knapp farm. But before that it was the Wiltsey farm. But the family, it was all related family through marriage. And the Wiltsey daughter married this Wright Knapp. And he used to live on Jackson Road, but he bought this farm where I was brought up back in, I don't know, say around 1850 or something, around that period. Because the Wiltseys, some of them anyway, moved to California, to the Sacramento Valley in California.
So we lost them out of the, out of the town.
Right now moved from Jackson Road over to and lived in the former Wiltsey farm. And
So your father over there, he had, what, about 220 acres, you said?
Yes, around that.
And when you grew up, he was in dairying?
Yes, my father and my grandfather were in a dairy farm. And they also had a 20-acre fruit orchard on the side of the mountain. And just gone now completely.
Were they growing apples?
They had apples. Well, my grandfather had a lot of peaches one time, but the peach trees don't last too long, so they finally lost most of them. They died of old age or frost.
And they sold the apples as eating apples, or did they make them into cider?
Well, mostly as eating. I guess there had been a smaller orchard there to start with, and then they enlarged it to 20 acres with new trees. Originally, probably went a good deal for cider, but they planted more trees and it got to be bigger, so they had apples to sell as fruit for eating and cooking. And
the dairy farm, how many, do you remember how many cows they had?
I don't remember back in those days how many they had.
Just roughly.
I suppose they had about 25, maybe 30, but I doubt they had that many, but I'm not sure.
Would they have been the Holsteins or the...
Yeah, mostly.
And that was pretty...
Well, when I was a kid, I really didn't do much with the cows. Not until I got in high school. Then sometime after I was in high school, I started working to take care of the cows and milking them then. But I don't remember the exact year or what year it was. But I'd milk cows in the morning before school and then get on the bus and go to school and then come back at night again, milk cows. I was wondering how I got my homework done and everything doing that. But
were you milking the cows by hand at that time, or did they have machines?
No, unfortunately, they had machine then. In fact, my grandfather Bailey, he had an agency for some milking machine. He would sell them, you know, to some farmers. I don't know how many he ever sold, probably not many, but he could sell them. I remember he had an advertising plate where they used to make brochures. That's the only thing I remember, what he had it, something they could print up brochures advertising this milking machine.
And you know, you were talking about school, you were talking about going by bus to school, but that was the high school.
Well, that was high school.
Now, where did you start school?
Well, I started in a little school up in, almost up to Lee Town Road, up the upper end of Austin Mountain Road, up on top of the mountain. It was just right about at the intersection of Lee Town Road and Austin Mountain Road. It was a tiny one-room school.
Is that school still there, do you know?
The house is still there. It's been converted to a house. I only went there one semester, or whatever you call it. And the teacher must have seen me. She used to go by my house every day. And must have, somehow or other, she knew I was there. And she had so few pupils. She stopped and asked, couldn't I take him to school with me every day so I have more pupils?
So that's why
I went with the school teacher every day for that one term.
Did she have a car then?
She came from Beacon, I think, commuted up to her job from Beacon with a car.
How many students were there in the school? Do you remember that?
I can't remember. Might have been 10 or so.
And then you went to Gayhead School?
Went to Gayhead School. It's down there now. It's the Rand Manning real estate office now. Except they doubled the size of the building. And
what year would that have been?
I don't know what year I started school. I don't even remember what year I got out of grade school.
Well, how many students were there at that school? Because they taught what?
Well, I mean, what? Got up to 35, 40, I think.
And they were all
in, with one teacher.
In one room?
One room in the Gayhead School. Except in the, when they had to have Regents exams, they always had to go to Hopewell, to the two or three room school they used to have in Hopewell. Over there to get certain exams, the state exams over there at Oakville.
Who were some of the other students there, the names, Jackson's, Knapp's?
Well, no, they was in the Shenandoah one-room school, Knapp's and Jackson's. My school was, well, Jesse Johnson, that people know around here, former deputy supervisor on the town board.
Yeah, you were saying that Jesse Johnson went to the
school. His brother, Herbert. And then there's...
Now, his sister, Mildred Pearson, or is now Mildred Pearson, Jesse Johnson's sister, she went to the upper Hopewell
Beekman
school.
Road School.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know her. Well, I was trying to think, well, somebody else that went to Gayhead School was Nelson Horton. He still lives over to Hopewell. In fact, in the early days, he lived on the farm next to our farm, Nelson did. So yeah, I used to go and play with him summers, and you know, when they weren't in school.
So,
and then there was down in your house, your old house, there was a Durso family. They went to the Gayhead School. There was several of them. I mean, D-U-R-S-O, I guess it is. And then there was a right next to the school, a house up on the hill. I think. Was a girl, Mary Dipper, I think. I don't know what became of her. She used to go there. And then there was Davis, two Davis children from down Harrigan Road. One was Mary Davis, the daughter, or the girl. She was the older one. And then there was her son, her brother, Lincoln Davis. And...
So you've lost touch with most of these people, or they've passed on?
Well, Nelson Horton, I guess, is the only one, and Jesse Johnson are the only ones that... I think Herbie Johnson died.
I think Jesse's in hospital, I heard, I think, the last time.
I wouldn't doubt it. And
and you were there from grades 1 through 8?
Yeah, 1 through 7, I guess.
1 through 7.
Had the same, Gayhead had the same teacher the whole time. She's Virginia Netful, or is her maiden name. M-E-P-F-U-L or something, Netful. And then she later married and became Virginia Breglia, B-R-E-G-L-I-A. And quite a long time. My father was a trustee, they called him, of the Gayhead School. He was the one that the students' parents or taxpayers elected to supervise the school and be charged with a budget, paying the teacher and that sort, and maintaining this building. He was had that position for quite a long time. I don't know what he probably still was when I left there.
Now, at that time, did the parents of the students have to pay the taxes, or was the whole town taxed?
I think it was the whole town, but I'm not positive. But as far as I know, it's the same as it was now. But that school, well, both schools, I remember, was this heated by a central stove. You come in a cold morning, and everybody try to get their feet up against the stove, get their feet warm.
Did you have to bring the wood in? Was one of the students allocated?
One of the Gayhead, I don't know, I guess that probably was on coal by then. The one up in the mountain, I wouldn't surprise, it probably did have wood. And, it was a little bigger stove down in the Gayhead. I think the one up in the mountain was probably this little stove right in the middle of the school, probably.
And so then you transferred to Beacon, was it Beacon High School?
When I went to the eighth grade.
And by that time the bus was coming around to pick everyone up?
The bus came.
Was that when
the school? Of course, in the Gayhead school, I had to walk every day. Unless it was raining, pouring rain, then my parents took me to school in Gayhead.
How long would that take you?
Well, to walk, I don't know, half an hour, I guess, or at least.
What did you do for lunch? Did you take your own lunch?
You took your own lunch with you, a paper bag lunch or a lunch box, whichever.
What about discipline? Was the teacher strict, or was she able to maintain discipline in the class?
Well, I don't think she had too much trouble. It didn't seem like she had too much dissension.
You didn't ever play any games or tricks on her?
I don't remember. I don't think so. It'd have been anything too memorable, I would have thought of it, I guess. But I wouldn't have thought of it. Somebody I'd been an instigator, but.
And then had you at that time moved across? No, you hadn't moved to this farm.
That was until I was grown up.
So then you went to Cornell.
Took
agriculture.
Of course, in Gayhead there, the two grade schools have both had outside privies.
Yeah.
Completely different from nowadays. Well, I went to high school in Beacon, and I say it was with a bus. And, of course, some of the other people's school went other directions, went to Wappingers or to Arlington or some other place. Somehow or other, we got to go to Beacon. And the bus ran a few years. Finally got down just to a big taxi like took us. And then they said they weren't going to send, the district said they weren't going to send anymore to Beacon High School. So I wanted to continue, so my father bought me a used Ford V8, 1937 Ford V8 coupe. I drove to school with that. And those two girls that lived nearby wanted to continue also to Beacon, so they went with me every day. So the three of us drove, made our own school bus.
What were their names? You?
What?
What were the young ladies' names?
Well, the one that lived closest, across the bound by the parkway, she was Jeanette Amaday. And the other one lived down in 52. That was Gene Wright. I guess I haven't seen him since I got out of high school. So.
At that time, what was the town like? The population must have been pretty small, coming up to the middle of the 30s.
Yeah,
probably 3,000 people.
Certainly a lot different it is now.
Were there blacktop roads everywhere?
No, this road, Austin Mountain Road, in those days was a dirt or gravel road. And they used to grade the road about every week to take the potholes and washboard out. You know, the road in a week or so would get all like washboard with cars. always got bumpy. So they's always forever grading it. That's why they figured when they could do black topping, or they started out with oil and stone first. They sprinkle some oil on the road, and then they scatter some crushed stone or washed gravel, and then they put more oil and more washed gravel, and they build it up. And they did that first before we had blacktop. And they figured that was cheaper than keep continuously grading the road and replacing the gravel and that sort of thing. So,
but by that time, 52 was well blacktopped.
52, far back as I can remember, that was blacktopped. But and I guess in the 30s, sometime in the 30s, or when I was in Gayhead school, they rebuilt 52. And they took out, you know, a lot of the curves. And
is that when they took down Gayhead
Inn? They took down the old inn, and that was a shame. I just, you know, remember that vaguely. Remember being there. And used to be a tree in the road in front of the inn. It was a general store, an inn, and post office, and all in one. And there's several other buildings there, too, next to it. One was a stable, and then I think maybe it was a house, and
on the other side of the road where the highway department is now, do you remember that being a milk collection area?
Yeah, there was a milk collection plant or something there. There was, I don't remember the building, but I remember right after it was taken down, I remember seeing where it had been. I don't seem to remember the building. But, and right there, they used to cut ice there, I think.
Off the mill pond?
They filled in most. It was on the, you know, the town shed side of the east, southeast side of the present 52. It was quite a pond there, too. In fact, I think about where the bridge is, they used to have a low dam or something to back the water up further. And they cut ice off of there to put in this milk collection building to cool the milk.
So there was an ice house in the...
I think there was an ice house. I said, I don't remember the building. Yes. Generally all those buildings had an ice house included with them.
You mentioned the stables. Was that a livery stable, or was it attached to the hotel?
I don't remember anything about it. No, I think it was might have been a building in between. But there was some kind of a barn there. But when I remember it, there wasn't anything going on anymore, so it was abandoned, kind of. And... But the things changed quite a bit when they rebuilt the 52. They widened and straightened it and made it concrete. Of course, now it's been blacktopped over, but I think I remember, though, it was still blacktop, but it was a narrower, about like our town roads are now, the older ones.
And the road 376, was that blacktopped as well? Up to...
I think it was.
Where the present town hall is?
I think it was, but I couldn't say for sure, but I don't remember them being dirt roads, so... But I don't remember a heck of a lot.
Soon after you left Gayhead, was that when it was closed down, Gayhead School?
Oh, it went quite a while yet. I don't know how long it went. But they all got included in the Wappinger Central School District, and then they closed them down.
So you set out to follow in your father's and your grandfather's footsteps and be a farmer. Was that the idea for going to Cornell?
Well, that was the idea. Which I really hadn't thought much about until I got into high school and started milking the cows and that sort of thing.
That was your
love. Well, I did, you know, I used to, when I was a kid before I got to doing cows, I did have raised chickens every year for a few years. I don't know how many. I get baby chickens and you know, little baby chickens, and then hatch them, and not as already hatched when I got them, but and then raise them up to maturity, and then I'd have the hens for eggs, and I'd have some eggs to sell. I generally wholesaled them, took them to somebody else that sold them.
What, to one of the local stores, or?
Well, no, there was people down Austin Mountain Road, I forget their name right offhand. Oh, there's Mrs. Barrett. I said they lived in the Horton house. They used to have a vegetable and egg root and beacon, so I took them there for a while. And then there's some other people on Austin Mountain Road I took eggs to, too. But
did it help pay for the gas for your Ford to get to,
I guess,
to get to the high
school?
Then
I wasn't doing chickens anymore. I was doing cows. So I don't know.
So did your father pay you then?
I don't know
for
if I even got paid then. Just got my gas. But I was fortunate to be able to do that. Because it was gas rationing then. But I got gas rationing coupons because I was taking the two other girls. Being three of us were going, we were kind of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
The ration board gave us gas coupons. That was during the, you know, during the
war,
Second World War. And, of course, I graduated high school in 1945, so that was about the end of the war, so.
And how did you get to Ithaca? You drove yourself?
Well, the first winter, my folks would take me up and leave me off up there, and then come back and get me in the spring. But I came home for Christmas and Thanksgiving, I guess, on the train. I'd get a ride somehow to Syracuse and then get on the train and come home. And I remember one night I was doing that, and it was really cold, very cold. Well, it was a cold night. And I got a ride to a friend that, well, I guess he lived in the same house where I rented a room up to Ithaca, and I think it was him, and he took me up to Syracuse so I could get the train in a Jeep. Well, it was one of those, the body was enclosed, but it wasn't very warm. Now I got on the train and sat there for half an hour. The train didn't start. Finally got going. I know different times it stopped, and it took hours and hours. It was so cold, the train was just barely running. And I got in to Poughkeepsie about 3 o'clock in the morning, I guess. I had to call my father then, wake him up, and tell him, come get me, I'm home.
He probably wasn't
too
pleased.
But the train, you know, sometimes they had to stop because things weren't working right. And it was really about zero or colder, probably. And
so did you enjoy your time there?
Oh, yeah. I didn't have the hilarious time that some people had, but it was okay. I didn't live on campus. I rented a room in the same house the whole 4 years. But there was a couple that had a house on Miller Street in Ithaca. It's 116 Miller Street, I guess. And they rented out actually 3 rooms in their house to students. Of course, we had to get our meals somewhere else. We either went down to College Town, which was a couple blocks from where I lived, on the outskirts of the college, or else sometimes we'd go to the cafeteria on the campus, go to different places. And
so after you graduated,
but after this,
was that when you came back to the farm, too? Or did you
go
somewhere
I came
else?
Right direct back to the farm. In fact, I was here every summer on the farm. Summer vacation, I come home and back to cows and getting hay and all that.
Were they still
early
in
summer?
Were your parents still in dairying at that time?
Oh yeah, they still were up until 1965. So I went on another 20 years, I guess. Old habits are hard to kill you.
And where did the milk go? Did it go to Borden's at that time, or?
Well, we did take milk over to the, for a time, over to Hopewell, to what was used to call the Borden plant. I don't remember how many years we went there. That I don't know how many years he hauled him. But he used to have to take it. I guess my father had to take it himself over there to the plant in Hopewell. Later years, I guess somebody else hauled it. Then they got a load from different farms. They took it up to Billings. There was a creamery up there in Billings. There were Ryan Oil businesses now. The creamery's gone. That's been burned down or something. We used to take it up there. I said somebody else hauled it.
Yeah.
Well, for a time before that, I guess it went to Beacon. They had a milk creamery in Beacon. It was called Emmadine or something, and we used to go down there, I guess.
Was that associated with J.C. Penney's farm, Emmadine?
Well, I don't know what the name is, but I don't know at that time whether there's really any connection anymore. Maybe it's just using the name, but they had a milk plant and bottled milk in Beacon, right in the center of the city there. And they stopped bottling milk and went in different, it was sold, and they had a cheese plant there making Sargento's cheese or something, or some kind of cheese, had a cheese factory there. Now the place is gone.
Brunetto's, was it?
I thought it was Sargento, but what's the name you said?
Well, Brunetto. But
it could have been that, yeah. One or the other. Maybe it's both, I don't know.
Does Don Nickerson ring a bell with you?
Oh, yeah, I guess I went to school with him, I think, in Gayette, I guess. He's one of them.
Because he gave the Historical Society some bottles from Emmadine milk.
Well, I guess his father worked for Emmadine, I think. Or maybe he did in later years. Because Emmadine was gone. I don't know when Penny finally quit the farm. I don't know what year that was. But that went for a long time, good many years.
Who else was in dairying at that time? Were the Jacksons?
They had a
dairy farming?
Dairy farm. And
the Phillips up on 82?
Yeah. When I was in high school, Mary Phillips went to Beacon High School, too. But her father was president of the Matty One Bank down there. So he went to work at the bank every morning. He drove in the pickup truck. He took the milk the same time to the Meekin milk plant when he's on his way to the bank.
Really? I don't think it seemed.
And Mary used to ride with him. We'd look out the back of the bus and wave to her, see her in the pickup.
He wouldn't see too many bank managers driving pick up with the milk cans in the back today, would you? I think also Mary used to go to Beacon sometimes, or to school at least, in that surrey with the horse-drawn surrey. So the story goes, anyway.
You don't think she? You think she went to Beacon all the way with that?
Well, maybe it was a local school.
Maybe it's a local school, like it was Louise Palin used to. Well, I guess she rode her horse to the Wickaby school.
Yes.
And she rode to work, to school every day. And
so you knew Mary Heaney then quite well?
Oh, yeah.
Or Mary Phillips as she was then?
Her, yeah. She, that's...
Were there many people still riding horses or driving horses at that time in the area?
No, I don't think so. Everything's gone to cars and trucks. Well, back when I was a kid, we still had... I don't know how old I was when we got rid of them. We had two horses. My grandfather had six or seven at one time, plus a yoke of oxen. And he used to train the horses and the oxen himself. And the horses, I know what, well, we kept the two for quite a few years.
What were they?
All I did was spread the cow manure with them and cultivate corn with them. Well, in the beginning, they had a two-row riding cultivator so they could use the two horses. Finally, one of the horses, I don't know whether it died or what happened, but it disappeared. And so he's down to one horse. So then about all age was, he was a one-row walk-in cultivator with the one horse to cultivate the corn. And finally that horse probably got too old or died or something. I never heard his gruesome fate, what happened to him, poor thing. But
do you remember the oxen?
I don't remember oxen. They, no. I was too young when they still had them. I guess I do have a picture somewhere of the oxen.
Pulling a cart or...
Well, just standing up in front of the barn, I guess. I think they had their ox yoke on, though.
Yes. There were quite a few oxen used in the area, I believe, at one time. I guess the ground is fairly heavy for ploughing. They were probably more useful than horses.
Well, they said it's good for digging out the ditches in the meadows, too. The low, wet fields.
Yes.
They used to have a slip scraper. You'd guide it with two handles, like a plow, and with the two oxen pulling it. And you, if you wanted to dig, you lift it up a little in the handles, and it would dig right in the ground. And you get the bucket full, and then you'd drag it a ways, and then you'd start tipping it, and then it would flop up on its own somehow to dump the dirt out.
Now, there used to be a lot of drainage ditches in the area.
Well, yes, a lot of the land now is all swamps, was drained, and they cut hay on it. But they didn't have the heavy machinery like we had now, so they had lighter stuff. And when the land was first cleared, I guess it was mostly a lot of the work done by hand, probably, so it wasn't worried about making ruts in the land. So they could farm a lot of that land that you couldn't really farm now. So they...
Do you remember the farm?
They used to have, somebody would come around, they called him Dick the Ditcher. Some guy would come, he'd stay a week or something, you'd put him up for a week, and he'd go out and do all the hand digging in the ditches to open things up.
So, I know that.
Same way they used to have somebody come around to make shoes for the family. That's all before my time, that's my grandmother Bailey's time. In fact, they used to have little shoes that was made by one of those itinerant shoemakers, little baby leather shoes that were made by one of those men.
You've still got them? Or?
They're probably around here someplace. Now I don't know. They were proud possessions and always used to be able to know right where to find them, but now I'm not sure. Well, they might be in that cabinet outside there, probably are. But that was kind of interesting how times had changed.
Yes. And they used to pay Dick the Ditcher some money as well, or did he do it principally just for his keep? Yes.
I don't know what kind of money he'd get in those days. That was before my time. And some of that land, they used to keep ditches open. They started putting cows in there for pasture. It had been just hay meadow. And then they put the cows in there. And that was sort of the ruination of it. Went to bogs then and spoiled it for hay. And so I remember that.
I don't know if it's true, but Vern Jackson told me one day, because at the back of my property, the land is very wet, and there are some ditches, but most of those have been filled in. He said that when some of the soldiers came back from the Civil War, that they were put on digging ditches just to keep them employed. I don't know if you heard that.
No, but it sounds logical. I don't know who paid for it, but was the government is actually paying in those days, a town or something? Or?
Now, your father was he ever town supervisor?
No.
He was on the town board?
No, he wasn't. He ran for town assessor once, but got defeated. He ran on the Democrat Party then.
Times haven't changed much then.
Just to say. he ran for fire commissioner. So he was fire commissioner for over 20 years. And they're run the fire department, they take the tax money that's collected for fire prevention and are in charge of spending that money and supervising the firemen. And in fact, he got to be chairman of the Board of Fire Commissioners for a good many years. That's the only elected office he ever Of course, not many people vote in that. They don't consider that important, like supervisor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have quite as big a budget as the whole town. It's just a part of the budget. So,
were you a volunteer fireman for a time?
Yes. From when I finished college and then I was home, I joined the volunteer fire department. And I was for I don't know how many years. Gradually sort of tapered off, went to less and less of their functions. And I couldn't see how I could do. Of course, the Jacksons do pretty well, but there's more of them. They're very active in the fire department, the whole family. But I said I was sort of just one, and I couldn't do the farm work and run to brush fires and things in the spring.
Yeah.
It was conflicted too much of my work, so I...
Where was the firehouse at that time?
Well, I belonged to Stormville Fire Company in Stormville. See, there's several in East Fishkill, Stormville, Hillside Lake, and Hopewell, and Wicopee. And each of those are independent organizations that are run by the members. And they only work on... Well, they get paid by the town to house the fire engines and to use them. They don't get paid for using them, but for keeping them undercover and maintaining the fire equipment.
For you to get to Stormville, though...
But they don't get any pay. It's all volunteer donations.
When you went to Stormville, would you have gone out through the back of the farm, out through Charlie Tucker's land?
Well, not ordinarily.
To get to
52? I could, but always went just by the up Route 52. My father says when he was young, they used to be able to, in the winter, they could pretty well ice skate all the way up. The swamps would be flooded out and back, and they'd ice skate to Stormville, or pretty near to Stormville in those days. But now it's more grown up, but I can see where you probably could.
Do you?
Generally, the water level's higher, and then it freezes over, and...
Were you friends with Charlie Tucker, or...?
Well, I guess I've known him I was acquainted with his mother, you know, I made her acquaintance. My father knew him very well, but... Charlie, in around the time of, I don't know what years, he was in the military, but...
I guess he's a bit older than you, is he?
Well, he is quite a few years older.
Yeah.
And he was away and flying supplies over the hump to China. With transport planes.
Yeah, he was always quite a keen flyer, I understand. Yeah. So who else in the area would you have known? Jaycocks, were they still around at that time?
Well, this farm where we are right now was in those days was the Jaycocks farm up until about 1940, I'd say, roughly. Let me see. Yeah, roughly around that time. It was Jenny Jaycox, a widow, lived here. She had three sons and a couple daughters. I'm pretty sure she had three sons. And they was trying to run the farm. This widow, she lost her husband, Howard Jaycox. And Howard's brother still yet over in Shenandoah, or not Howard, Howard's brother George lived in Shenandoah. The Jaycox's original homestead was Shenandoah.
That house is still there, isn't it?
Yeah, the house is still there.
The large white one, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember when we see me, he's hauling, one time my milk was being hauled by the man that worked for George Jaycox. They had a truck and they used to have the milk route for a while, picking up the canned milk to haul it. And one time our milk was hauled by, Jack Hayden and known as my brother-in-law, I guess, I can't remember his name now. They worked up on the farm up there that belonged to, Mrs. Banana, and I can't think of her first. It wasn't May, it was the other one. There's two banana farms in Thornville. And they had the milk loop there hauling milk for a time, for a few years.
And I'm going to come back to the your family background. You are related to the Van Vlacks, I believe, also the Van Wycks.
Well, I say the Van Vlacks.
Who else? The Hortons?
Van Vlacks, it's quite distant. My great-great, I guess, grandmother. She was a Van Vlack. She married that Wiltsy I was talking about. They had the home farm, original home farm, the Wiltsy place. This Van Vlack, I can't think of her first name now. I wish I could. She married a Wiltsy. And their daughter married Wright Knapp, who was my great-grandfather. And the Van Wycks, that was on my mother's side of the family. The Hortons, it's their ancestors. They go back to, I guess it was Cord Horton. If I remember right. I used to know all this on Pat, but Cord Horton married Richard Van Wyck's daughter. Was her name Hannah, I think? Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah.
She originally married Brinkerhoff, and he died or something, one of the Brinkerhoffs. And then she married this Cord Horton. And they're buried over in that little cemetery in front of the St. Columbus Church in Hopewell.
And up on Route 82?
Yeah, right in 82, the corner of 376 and 82. There's a little cemetery up in the bank there, next to the intersection. I'm pretty sure they're buried there. That's a Van Wyck cemetery. But Richard Van Wyck is his...
Now, Richard Van Wyck lived in the McCall Funeral
Home. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, the one that lives in the present McCall Funeral Home, which is supposed to be built about 1740. His daughter married this Cord Horton, and he was, I don't know if he's Cornelius Van Wyck's son or grandson. I didn't know that, now I go offhand. But Cornelius is the one that built that house in Fishkill that the Historical Society has in Fishkill. So
there was also a Cornelius Van Wyck who had a house behind the post office.
Oh, yeah.
The Ward House.
Yeah.
Well, no.
That was a later generation.
Yes.
I remember it was same way as the house.
That was.
I don't know if he's a Cornelius, too, where Holiday Inn is in Fishkill. That was the later years, the Race House that they tore down to build the... That's next to the present Van Wyck House in Fishkill. That was a nice, right up in shape house, and they tore it down to build that darn Holiday Inn. But that, I think that might have been Cornelius too, but that was probably the original Cornelius' son, I suppose.
Yeah.
Maybe he was brother to that Richard or something. So I'm not very good at genealogy. I keep forgetting it. But so I'm more closely related to the Van Wycks than I am to... It's really direct. It just always came down on the female side, so the name didn't carry through.
Yes.
Whereas...
What was your mother's
name? My mother was a Horton.
A Horton.
But I said her... Her great-great-grandfather or great-great-great was that Richard Van Wyck. So, I think they're on the Horton side, too. One of the Hortons, that's one of my great-great-grandfathers or something. He had about three wives or something. I mean, they all had bad luck. One of them was a Storm. I think that's the one that the wife that I came from. It was because my mother's grandfather, my great-grandfather, John, was John Storm Horton. So he got the name from his mother. So, But I forget what their other two wives' names were, but I guess he had three wives and they all died from one thing or another. So,
when did the Baileys first arrive in this area? Do you know that?
Well, that I can't tell you anything much about the Baileys. I don't really have anything at all on my grandfather Bailey. He started out as kind of I think he's brought up by somebody else than his own parents. I think he's brought up by a nap. He's kind of an orphan. And so I got a first cousin that would like to know more about the Baileys, but I can't help him out either, so.
Now, your father bought this farm in the 50s, 1956, you say?
Well, we bought this in 1954, I guess it was. And from a musician from the city named Harris Hubble. He one time played in the City Service Band of America. It was on the radio, I guess.
Was it an operational farm at that time?
Well, it was a dairy farm when he bought it that this Jenny Jaycox, the widow, was running with her sons. And she sold the farm and bought a house in Poughkeepsie. So that's.
And as soon as you bought it, did you move across to here or did
no,
you?
No, I said it was over 10 years before I moved over here. It was when they bought the place, it had tenants upstairs. It was three apartments then, the house was. It had tenants and it had the top floor. And then. And I guess the owner, Jaycox, no, Hubble, he was using half the downstairs, and the other half, his son-in-law and daughter lived in. So they had divided up like three families stuffed in there. And, of course, he'd kind of come on hard times, and he had a heart attack. And last year he had the place. He couldn't work anymore. His son was trying to run it by himself, Jimmy Hubble. Finally decided to give it up, and Harris Hubble moved to Florida. He's selling real estate down there in Florida, and one of these developments in Florida.
That was the son, was it?
No, it was Harris that owned the place here. His son here a couple, two or three years ago, he stopped by. I guess he lives out west someplace now. And he stopped by to see where he lived as a young fella. And ran the farm himself, I say, for about a year.
So then you ran the two farms when you
took
it over?
Well, we did. At the beginning, we ran the two farms. We had the milk cows were over in the original home farm. And then we had heifers and dry cows over here. And you know, those days, I guess we was making about 9,000 bales of hay of this, you know, the 50-pound square bales for a while there on the two farms. I had to stack some of it outside, which didn't work too good. It's hard to keep it covered outside, keep it dry.
There used to be a cow barn on this farm, though, didn't there?
Yes.
Which the one that's collapsed.
Well, Hubble kind of expanded it, improved it. Well, it was still usable when we got it from Hubble because he, you know, he'd been using it for cows right up until he sold it. But I used it for a few years. I don't know how many years we used it. And then we got in 19, 65, we sold the dairy cows. And then that's, I guess, when we, well, we used a little after that, I guess, but not so much because I went right away. I got beef cows after I sold the dairy cow. Well, in fact, before we got rid of the dairy cows, we had the beef cows in the fall, and we sold the dairy cows in the spring, in March or something, the following spring.
That was a heavy winter then for work, wasn't it?
Yeah. In this barn over here, we had to, didn't have any automatic electric gutter cleaner. We had to wheel it out in a wheelbarrow. All the fallout, you know.
That must account for why you've kept so fit for so long.
So I'm all doubled up. Gravity's pulling.
So then you moved into this house in what, roughly what year?
Yeah, I hate to admit, I didn't keep track of the years, so I don't know. I don't know what year it was. Well, was there any way I could figure that out from anything or not?
Did your parents move across here as well?
Yeah. They moved herself, being it was only half a mile.
Yeah.
Pulled stuff all over in a pickup truck. A lot of trips.
We should really describe this house, Elton. I think it was built around 1819.
That's what they say. See that Janet Jaycox, the widow, her husband was, his family, direct family, was the ones that built the house. It was his ancestor, who was Peter Anderson. And they're supposed to have built this house, according to the Jaycox family, that it was built when their ancestor was, Peter was 12 years old. So we're doing a little research to figure out that when he's 12 years old, it was 1819. So they claim he helped draw lumber for New Hamburg for the house. I don't know. He's only 12 years old, but I say kids on the farm did things pretty early in those days, I guess. So maybe he did.
What would that have been? Would that have been brought up the Hudson? Or?
You know, I think it's probably mainly the floors. There's some kind of yellow pine or something, and probably that was shipped up on boats from the south.
Mm-hmm.
And New Hamburg is one of the ports here in Dutchess County in those days. So the most direct route to Hopewell is from New Hamburg. So I presume that's where he got it from. Of course, this house, most of the frame has come off the land probably. I mean, a lot of the beams are hand-hewed. And though there's some sawed, there's a mixture of sawed lumber, and a lot of it's sawed by sawmill, but it was an old-fashioned water-powered sawmill that was an up-and-down blade that went up and down, powered by water power. And
would that likely have been at the Ennetstone Creek, or was that a wood sawmill?
I don't know. It'd be nice to know, but there's no way knowing it could have been. Except I'm not even sure if there was a sawmill there. In the beginning, I thought there was, but when there was still anything left, I wasn't so interested in things like that then. And
yeah,
when it's all gone, I'd be more interested.
Yeah, I guess it could have been over at Carpenter Road.
They could have been there too.
There was a sawmill there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Gregory's
Mill. In fact, it used to be our tenant house for the farm that my grandfather Bailey built back around, I'm guessing around 1900 or something. The frame for that house is all oak, I guess, hardwood. And it was supposed to have been all sawed at Gregory's Sawmill over in Carpenter Road. So, but, of course, in later years, he had a gasoline-powered sawmill. And he started out with water power, and then, well, I don't know if he actually did it himself, but it had been a water-powered mill there, and which you've got pictures of it in your East Fishkill book. And that was a combination, I guess, grist mill and water-powered mill. The one at Gayhead may have been too, but it was a pretty small mill in Gayhead, smaller mill than the one in Carpenter Road.
There used to be another mill opposite the Hopewell Church, I believe, McEwen's.
Yes.
Do you recall that?
I remember the building. I never, had long ceased operating when I could remember. In fact, I say back when there was, way back when I was young. I don't remember much about it. And then I realized there was a vacant building there, and the dam had been was going in, had washed away. And I asked Kenny McCoon about it, but he said he didn't know anything about it either. So, but
just coming back to this house, you've got some very fine woodworking within the house itself, and fortunately it hasn't been changed probably from when it was originally built.
The inside has been changed very little.
So it's fairly unique in that respect, because a lot of the houses around here have been upgraded, modernized, changed, ruined. Yeah, this one still retains the old character and the
The outside's changed, but it essentially looks the same. But it used to have the fancy cornices over the windows outside that are similar to the doors inside, except on a little smaller scale, I guess. It was on all the front windows. I do have an old picture that isn't very clear, you know, that shows the house around 1900. Then it still had the fancy woodwork on the outside. There's still some of it left. The front door and the window above the front door are still like they were originally.
I know,
but
I
all the rest of them have been changed. They simplified it, you know, took off the fancy woodwork, and easier to maintain. And
I know I commented on the double windows up on the upper landing, and you mentioned that it's not unique, that the Stockholm house where Mildred Doughty lives probably has the same design.
Yeah.
And I did go and look at that, and you are right. And I think the house that's on the corner of 82 and Beekman Road, in the V there, I got a feeling that also has the same arrangement on the upper landing.
I haven't been in either one of those houses, but I imagine it's...
Just from the outside.
I think there's a house down near in Warren Lane, Wickopy Way down there. I think that's similar stairs. The old, I don't know what, that might have been the Ben Wake house originally. It was the Warren homestead, in my time. And that house is very similar to this, except it's had and been added to and made longer. And, no, this house, well, this used to have an addition on the east end, northeast end, that was taken off in the 20s, long before I got the place. And that 1900 picture does show that. It's almost like a little house in itself, and it had dormer windows upstairs.
Was that put in? That was built after this house, or do you think
I don't
that was
know.
Earlier?
The Jaycox family claims it was built after this house, but I sometimes wonder if maybe it was just remodeled or something after this house, because generally the old houses like this, the smaller end would be the older, where they started small and got bigger and more grand as they went along. So I don't know. I don't even know which room in this house was the original kitchen. That might have been. That's where he lived.
Oh.
But he had a summer home in a little Cape Cod, out in Cape Cod, Duxbury, Massachusetts. And when he'd go from Washington to Duxbury, he'd stop here for a number of years and stay overnight. Wasn't anybody staying here then, but he'd stay over here by himself, and we'd go out to dinner or something, then he'd get up and go in the morning and go on. But he stayed in the house where he was born.
So the last 30 years you've been running the farm here as a beef production unit?
Yeah.
With Herefords?
So beef, polled Hereford beef cattle. And I saved my father and grandfather farm, and they used to raise, for a number of years, they had the orchard, and they raised the orchard, the apples. Once they had very good apples still with these nice big ones. But they raised sweet corn. Used to have about 30 acres of sweet corn, you know, jijied out of the corn in the cob. They used to, father took it to Washington Market in New York. That was on West Street, right across the liners, ocean liners came in across the street, and they had these little hole-in-the-wall markets all on West Street and storefronts where the wholesale vegetable market was. That's since been moved out of there to Hunts Point, Bronx. But I remember going down once in a while with him. He'd take off like 4:30, 5 o'clock with a load of corn and haul it down there to the wholesale merchant that would sell it to the stores. And the local farmers used to get together. Like sometimes we'd, if the Jacksons have some corn, we'd put their corn on the load. Or if Bananans had some, they had their own truck to Bananans. So they'd go one night, my father would go another night. Whenever there was corn ready to be picked, they'd get up a load and take it down to the market. My father went to, a few times to Yonkers too, there was a market, School Street it was, a wholesale market. And, but that's one thing we didn't cover before. so I don't know.
But you gave that up when you went into the beef cattle? I mean, obviously, the corn for the beef, but way for back. The animals, yeah.
I'm trying to think when my father finally gave it up. Well, I guess he gave that up when he went in the gravel business. He finally decided selling gravel was a better deal than farming, which we always kept up farming too, but my father devoted more and more of his time to the gravel and building driveways and things.
You didn't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning for that.
But he still did that once in a while, and I did it, and my grandfather Bailey was going to the barn almost until he died in his 75 or older. And
you always knew there was gravel in the farm, did you?
Well, yeah, they started digging on the original farm back in sometime in the 30s. They started digging right along the road. You'd back up to the bank along the road and start digging and throw it on the truck. They used to throw it on by hand. And for a good many years, the town of Kent, Putnam County, would come over and get gravel. They'd bring a load of men with them on the truck. They'd have shovels, and they'd throw the dump trucks. They'd fill them up by hand with hand shovels. And they drew a lot of gravel up over the mountain. And
was that the other side on the old farm?
Yeah. Well, it joined this farm. And finally, my father bought 5 more acres off this farm for gravel. And that's when they changed the driveway. He had to move the driveway because some of the gravel was under the driveway. So he built him a new driveway, which exists now. This is the third driveway that came in here. The first one, I don't know why they changed the first one, but the first one came in from that metal building over there on the curve of the road by the police barracks. The driveway used to start over there and came around back of the gravel hill on the back side into the farm here. Came down up by the old barn there. And they somehow or other changed that. And though I think that original driveway had originally belonged to the farm, I imagine. And the old lady, Jaycox, or Anderson, or whatever, she owned the farm here. She gave some land and a house to people that had worked for her. So I think when she did that, they had to change the driveway. Maybe. Because it was sort of right on the line between the two properties.
But when you moved over here, there was a big gravel bank on this land anyway. On Silver Ledge Farm, yeah.
Well, there was a big. I could show you if I get up. You see how rickety I am now on the television. I mean, on the tape. Boy, I got a picture.
Do you want to take a break for the moment?
No.
Oh wow.
Well, over it, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Here's this gravel bank. There's all this area.
Yeah.
There's a big hill here. This is where we are now.
Oh, this is it. Yeah.
And that's the Valley Parkway. New bridge goes across there. So. This belonged to this farm, and this over here, this is the line fence. This belongs to the Bailey farm, originally Knapp,
the farm. Okay.
And, but I said, this is all completely different now, because this map goes back, way back. I guess I didn't, I don't know what that goes back to.
I don't see the
40s cow. Anyway, probably.
I don't see the cows.
That's where they were building
the
parkway.
See the way that the hay was all stooped, or the corn was
stooped. Yeah, that's right. There. That's where the house where Rich's mother lives now is right there.
Oh, that's
that
corn field. Before they built the garage, yeah. Okay. No round bales in those days.
And
what is this?
Well, this is where the house is, I think. This.
Oh, this is the house.
That's the old barn. It shows up.
Yeah,
the house doesn't
right.
show
yeah,
up.
That's right. No, the house is probably here.
Now the barn's gone.
Yeah.
Let's see all this there. This is gravel back of the house here, too. All these hills were all gravel hills. So let's.
No,
so you can lean that against the chair here. That'll be all right. Oops. There. But.
So if we try and bring it up to the present time now, fortunately, this property, which is what, 440 acres you've got now?
Yeah, it's
the farm.
445, something like that.
But that part of that is going to be preserved for
well, 400 of it. There's 30 acres that isn't included in that, but it's mostly wetland anyway, so it'll probably stay the way it is. But I said this 400 acres, we with the aid of Dutchess County in New York State, we put this property in a conservation easement. So presumably forever, it can't be built up or changed. Only can build things that are involved would be farm buildings. I can't build houses except for people working on the farm. So, and that's only in a specified area. So it's got what they call a conservation easement on it, on the 400 acres. And that gravel bank area is included in this now.
In the easement area?
Yeah, we adjusted the lines so that would be included.
I must say that from my own experience, I've been over here and visited here and spent quite a lot of time driving around with horse and carriages, and it's absolutely magnificent farm, and it's wonderful that it is going to be preserved for the future. There are very few areas like this still left in the town of East Fishkill, and you can stand in the middle of the farm and look in almost any direction, and apart from the rumblings of Route 84
in the background and the rumbles,
it's probably very much like as it has been for the last 150 years.
Yeah, probably. I say 150 years ago, I think it was more of a cleared land. Well, back in those days, almost the whole countryside here was bare, almost bare trees, which is sort of the other extreme. And because they was using trees for fuel and making charcoal for the iron smelting and in those days. So.
Now, there's shown on the map, I think there's a silver ore mine near here?
Well, I said on the 1867 map, on some of the original farm, our original home farm, it says the silver ore on the 1867 map, a Beers map of New York City and vicinity. And that's where we got the name. Well, actually, we gave it to the original farm, which now I don't have anymore, which I have parts of it, though. I got some of the farm still left. Well, most of that gravel bank area, so where the gravel bank, that was part of the original farm. Then I still got 30 acres, I said, it's mostly low ground. That was part of the original farm. But I don't know whose authority. They said there was silver on this property. But actually, it's on the property that, I say, part of it's been sold.
Do you know if
all... It's over there now where Tompkins has lived. That was supposed to be the where it said silver ore on the map.
Do you know if...
In fact, there was a hole there, but it wasn't only, you know, like 4 or 5 feet deep, and it was just rounded off, you know. It wasn't that deep, even, I guess. And they said that's where they started digging for silver. And then the guy that was doing it died or something. He probably dug too hard, or he just wanted to get out of it, one or the other. Decided it wasn't going to be any silver, I guess. And so we went, when the 84 went through, we moved the house there. That house used to be over in 84. So we moved the house and set it right on top of this hole.
Wow.
If I had it now, I would like to dug there with the backhoe and see if I could find any artifacts or anything, but it didn't do it. So a little late now, the house sits right on top of the hole. So
there was a lot of iron ore in the area. Was there any up in the hills around here that you're aware of?
Well, just above Jackson's place there under the parkway, there was an iron mine right next door to Jackson's farm down here. The Shenandoah Mining Company. And all these farms along the brook, Shenandoah Brook, they had sold water rights to the mining company so they could use the water to wash the ore. And, of course, you got the water back probably all riled up. But they used it, and then they went on down the creek. But they I think you can see in some of the old deeds and things where the Shenandoah Mining Company had the rights to use the water. They bought up the rights to use the water. So,
I read in one history book that there was an iron smelting plant somewhere just to the east of Gayhead. Do you recall anything?
Well, it was over there at Carpenter's. I imagine it's by the mill at Carpenter Road. They used to call that,
furnace
years
mills.
Ago, they called it the
furnace
road or furnace mill road or something. And then they changed the name to after Carpenter, who built that present mill building, the stone mill building that's there. They changed it to him. I think he had something to do with electric. I wonder if he's the one that, same Carpenter, to start the Carpenter company that makes electric switches and things.
Could well be.
I often wondered. It must be.
Because he did make switchgear, very specialized switchgear, I think at one time.
He might have even done research or something there in that building. In fact, he had his own generator that he rebuilt the mill, and you know he had his own setup to generate electricity. And I think the present owners, I think, sold that equipment. But in that building, there was a hydroelectric power plant, there was, at one time.
Now, Furnace Mills, I've seen that on the map, and I understand that you're probably right. That was an area where I think there were quite a few houses and facilities
around that area, but there's nothing left there now,
I believe.
I think the bank where the road goes is a high bank there. I think maybe the mill, the splash furnace stood right where the road is. I'm just guessing, but... They generally had to be near a bank or something so they could build a bridge up to the top of the furnace stack so they'd haul the ore and the limestone and all that and dump it in the top of the stack. And so with the contour of the land over there, they could have done that. And then they might have used the water power to run the bellows to force air in the blast furnace.
So which side of Carpenter Road?
It's
the opposite side to where the...
It would be on the south side of the road.
Yeah, okay.
Southeast.
I mean, it's quite a steep bank there now, alongside the left side of the road going towards Hopewell. And, of course, there's no evidence left at all of the old furnace. They must have torn it down and hauled all the stones away.
Yeah, I did.
But I assume that's where it is, because it looks like it's a place where they could easily build something like that. And sometimes they had it near water, so they'd have water power, possibly run the bellows or whatever. Otherwise, they had some way to compress air to blow on the fire to keep it hot. same way as a blacksmith has a bellows or a blower to blow his fire to make it hot enough to melt iron.
Were there any blacksmiths still left when you were growing up? You can recall.
Well, there was one in...
In the area, I don't mean... traveling blacksmiths like Buzzy.
No, they're
Buzzy
all...
Klein.
Well, there used to be one what we call Gayhead down here. In fact, it was next to the old... Well, there was one or two buildings in between, but it was on the southwest side of the current old town hall, the old wooden town hall. It was near that. I remember when it was still running. And Al Traver was the blacksmith. And he'd shoe horses and do all that, too.
Till what year would that have been?
Gee, I don't know. Back in the... Might have been the late 30s. I remember going there once, anyway. And my mother once... I don't know, was she just going to my father then before the marriage or afterwards, but... She picked up the horse there that had been left there to get shod at Al Travers, and she rode the horse home up to the farm, the work horse, the draft horse. And she said, remembers that. And then there was one in Hopewell. The building's still there. In fact, I remember when that was running yet. I don't know who the blacksmith was there.
That wasn't Pasco, was it? On Route 376?
It was on 376.
Near
it was near that
Mid-Hudson.
Mid-Hudson.
Hudson Pump.
The building that used to be the bank years ago, the first bank was built in the blacksmith shop. Lynn Hickman owned the building, and he had, he's a town supervisor, and he's probably trying to get the bank in Hopewell, and he owned this building, so it turned out they remodeled the old blacksmith. It was a two-story building. I forget that's what it is now, but the building's still there. They made it into the... It was the Matty One Bank that moved up there. And
well, you've certainly seen some changes in the town in your lifetime, Elton.
Yeah, I remember in Hopewell where the Grand Union was formerly. Now it's the Hopewell Farm Vegetable Market. That was all open field. And across the road, too. And there was that Cornelius Van Wyk house behind the post office. When that was just set out in the field by itself. Well, it had barns in back of it, but... There had been a Mulford place towards the end. And then I think Bry Dane had the lumber yard. I think he lived in it after the Mulfords. And
the Mulford house, or the Mulford farm, was on Fishkill Road, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, there were several Mulfords over there. In it. I think there was two places.
And I know I've spoken to you before. You remembered the Gildersleeve house opposite John Jay High School? Which is on... used to be.
Yeah,
on,
I remember
Andres.
That.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I got to see it once when they had the auction there to sell stuff. It stood there idle for a good many years, I guess, and then I think they had an auction. And after that, it would burn down.
That was quite an impressive house, wasn't it?
It was. I think it had mansard roof on top, though.
Yes, it did.
But it was a big house and had very big, impressive barns. Beautiful, old-style, 19th-century barns. I think they were painted yellow, and the house was white.
Now, on the opposite corner of Palin Road and 52, there was the old hotel up there, I think you and I spoken about.
Yeah, well, that was a mansion. Bartow mansion, I guess. He owned that before it got to be a hotel. I don't know when the last bar, I think it was Bartow. I have a book here, Dutchess History, Dutchess County, I think has a picture of it in it, how it used to be.
And was that was called Arcadia at one time?
Yeah, they called it Arcadia Farm.
And the part of the farm went across onto where IBM is
now.
Yes,
that was a big fields there, a couple big barns out there in the middle of the field. I remember going by one day, one of them was burning down. There was good barns, it was up in good shape when they, well, at least when that one burned, it was still in good shape. I don't know if they knew what started, whether lightning had something to do with it or...
Man-made?
You never know what kind it is, but
yeah,
there's several different kinds of lightning.
So what are your plans for this farm now? How do you see it going on into the next century? Well, not the next century, because we're in the next century, but...
Well, I hope we can keep it open as a farm, as open space, and not, if nothing's done with it, it'll just grow up to trees, but that's better, I guess, than having all of it suburbia. But we hope we can keep it going as some kind of an active farm. We're kind of looking into now, they're putting more emphasis on horses and less on cows. I don't know where we get this all going, but of course we've got room here. Most places that have horses don't have enough land. They don't raise their own hay. The property is cheaper to buy than it is to raise it. I don't know now, this price is getting so high, maybe it isn't.
How many acres have you got that you could grow hay on?
Well, really only about 135, 40 acres that's tillable.
Some of that at the moment you grow corn on for the cattle.
Yeah, I grow corn on about 10 acres of it now. And then pasture for the cows and of course, about the only kind of farming that's viable around here is raising hay for horses, and which I don't think is too viable, but they're still doing a lot of it. And then having raised truck garden part, you know, vegetable crops on a small acreage. You don't need a big acreage to raise vegetables, and which I got too much land here for that, but. If somebody wanted, they could raise vegetables very well on the cornfield out here, because that's highly tillable. And
mm-hmm.
Well, I got a couple fields like that, so some of the others are a little stonier; they wouldn't be so desirable. But
and that's grown crops for what, over 100 years, I suppose, on that land.
Yeah. So we hope to keep it going, so somebody.
Well, Elton, thank you very much for spending so much time talking to us, and I'm sure that when we look at this again in the future, it's going to be a very interesting talk.
Everybody's still awake.